This is Digital Dave again.
I'm Fast Eddie, at least I think I am. And with us today, we have Lieutenant General Charles Cleveland, the last jet ace of the Korean War. Good morning, General.
Good morning.
You're looking through the brochure there. You see an airplane you like?
I see every one of them I like, especially the fighters.
There okay. you go.
He's still looking for that F-86?
I came here as a guest of a guy who owns an F-86. Actually, he owns two of them, but he brought one of them in and he invited me to come along. And
nice.
I'm sure he let you sit in the airplane, too.
Well, he said we will this afternoon. He's flying in here about another 20 minutes.
Okay.
So I hope to get out of here and watch him.
We won't keep you long.
Well, you had quite an experience over there in Korea. I was at your seminar yesterday listening to you talk about knocking MiGs down. Sounds like things were pretty intense over there.
Well, they got pretty intense in peaks and valleys. Sometimes the MiGs were in training or they were in transition from one unit to another, and they didn't fly at all, at least south of Yellow River. But when they did, yeah, it could get pretty intense.
Could you tell the difference between the Chinese pilots and the North Korean pilots?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I don't think I fought against either one. All the ones we fought against were Russian.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's right.
But
right?
Officially.
But officially.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Russians, of course, denied it during the war, but it was well known at our national command levels. But we jocks, I was a lieutenant at the time, and we didn't know. We thought they were all Chinese.
Well, didn't you say, wow, these guys fly awfully good for rookies?
They were, I was surprised at how much better our American pilots were than they were. Our airplanes, you know, I flew the 86 F-86 A and E model, and we flew against the MiG-15, which is called, never mind, it's called something.
Okay. Yes, it has a nickname.
It
has a nickname, which we won't use over this air. But the airplanes were roughly comparable. Each airplane had its strengths and weaknesses, and we tried to exploit the MiG's weaknesses, and they tried to exploit ours, but we did a lot better job than they did.
Apparently.
I was going to say, you had 650s in the front of the F-86, and they had a 37-millimeter cannon and some lighter weapons on board.
Two 23s that were a hell of a lot bigger than our 50s.
Yeah.
223-millimeter and a 37.
Well, the advantage would the advantage be that the F-86 had a higher rate of fire?
Yeah, our rate of fire was about 1,200 rounds a minute per gun. So you only fired in short bursts. You didn't fire a minute long.
Yeah, you didn't carry that much with you.
Enough for about 12 seconds of actual firing. So your firing was in short bursts.
You were just tapping the trigger then.
Yeah, just about. Unless you get right behind a guy and you'd let it rip.
Yeah, then you know. Yeah, you know you're hitting them with everything, though.
Yeah, right.
You're not wasting them.
Yesterday, you mentioned Boots Blissé. He came up with the manual, No Guts, No Glory. What did you think of him and his tactics?
I flew under Boots, knew him well, flew with him several times. He was our operations officer in the squadron I was in, which is the 334th Fighter Squadron of the 4th Fighter Wing. And while we were there, he was composing his manual, and he gave to each one of his flight commanders, of which I was one, a typewritten page of, and the title was No Guts, No Glory. And that was the birth of his manual that he finished and reproduced after the war, and became the Bible for air-to-air fighting for the United States Air Force for years.
Do they still require reading of it?
I don't require it, but it's sort of a museum piece now. I have one, and I prize it.
Well, the other thing you got to realize is air-to-air combat has changed so much.
Oh,
the engagements are out over the horizon. You don't hardly even see him before your radar tells you he's there.
Yeah.
In your day, it was, you know, see and shoot
Yeah, I was fortunate to get in the Air Force right as we were converting from propeller driven to jet driven, and we were the last of the gunfighters. Air to air, you had to get right behind a guy or hit a very lucky deflection shot maybe. But today it's there still are guns, but they're backups, and the main missile, the main weapons is air to air missiles.
Right.
What did you think of the F-86?
Oh, it's a great, great airplane. In its day, it was a. I grew up admiring the P-51, and guys like John Gentile and Bud Anderson, who's here. I missed him today. We're both members of the Fighter Aviation Association. But I love the F-86. It was engineered beautifully. Cockpit was small and cramped. It was a small airplane, but it turned hard. It could just barely outturn the MiG-15. It was a little underpowered. The MiG was overpowered. It could out accelerate and out climb the 86, which is that's a pretty good advantage to have.
Yeah.
And that was their escape maneuver. If they were in trouble, they put about a 30 degree climb and try to go like hell, as they would say.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're the last ace of the Korean War. Now, listening to your seminar yesterday, you had four confirmed kills. How did the fifth one come about?
Well, it's a long story. I'll cut it very short. But I had claimed a probable victory in an encounter with a MiG-15. On September 21st, 1952, I remember the day and the time exactly. And when I hit him, and he started trailing smoke and losing altitude, but my wingman had called that we were being attacked from the rear by two other MiG-15s, and I said, Don, when they get too close, did you call the break? And sure enough, he did before I thought I would finish this guy I was chasing off. So we broke hard left and came home, and I didn't see him crash, didn't see him bail out, etc. So I claimed the probable. And some 50 years later, a friend of mine re-energized that whole effort and did a lot of research and found the Russian records from that very day.
Wow.
And he compared our claims, our intelligence claims, with the Russians' reported claims, and they admitted a loss of an F-80 of a MiG-15 at the very same time, same place, same circumstances that I had claimed are probable. And so, finally, after several years, frankly, of D.D. Overton's work, we took it to the Air Force Board for the correction of military records, and they approved that. The Secretary of the Air Force said, Cleveland, that's your fifth confirmed. You're Jet Ace number 40.
Wow.
That's incredible.
It still is.
It had to be very intense when you were in combat. I mean, the training and everything you had, was it all your moves and everything all automatic, or did you have to sit there and, well, I think I'm going to go after this guy and do this or that?
Well, it depends whether you're the attacker or the attackee.
Right, right.
But I had done a lot of practice air-to-air combat, both in the F-84 and the F-86. So I was, frankly, very confident.
And you could size up the situation and say, yeah, I got him. I got the advantage.
Yeah. And when you got him, you got a MiG-15 in your sights, and he's right ahead of you. Incredible feeling.
Yeah.
Well, here's another question for you. How much battle damage did you take during the war?
I got shot at maybe 5 or 6 times, sometimes close, never got hit.
Wow.
Lucky.
I was going to say.
No, good.
I was going to say a hit from a 37-millimeter cannon could do some real damage.
Oh,
I would expect it wouldn't take more than one or two to down the airplane.
Yeah, the 37s were lethal. Luckily, the Russian pilots had lousy gun sight and they were lousy shots. But the MiG-15 was very successful against our B-29s, were
big and slow.
That's a turkey
big and
shoot.
Slow. And they drove the B-29s from the air. We just stopped flying because we were losing too many.
Yeah.
That's wild. Must have been very intense in combat, but I bet it was pretty cool just to be cruising along in an F-86.
Well, you know, I still remember, and I flew the 86 a little bit after I got back to the States, and it was just a gorgeous little airplane to fly. Beautifully engineered, constructed, easy to fly.
Would you like to get back in one?
When and where? What time?
Where is it?
You're like a lot of military pilots. The older military pilots, the airplane that they flew, they loved. They would go right back in a New York minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was the funniest thing that happened to you in your combat flying? I like that question.
That is a good question.
Well, I'll tell you very, very quickly, and I told this story yesterday. I was flying wing, and wingman's responsibility is 6 o'clock, mm-hmm. defense. And we got attacked by a MiG-15, and I told my leader to break, and we broke, and the MiG was shooting, and those red cannonballs were going right underneath my tailpipe. And I said, God, I got to pull it a little tighter and get in the inside of the turn. And I snapped out, went into a spin.
Oh.
Right in the middle of combat. And when I recovered, I didn't expect to see another airplane in the air. Except I looked out, and there's another F-86. And I joined up on him. It was my leader. He had done exactly the same thing.
Oh,
oh geez.
And the MiG pilot thought, what was that?
Yeah. No, they said, those Americans, they very, 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 dignified and very, very good pilots. They do it together.
Yeah, that's funny.
Pure happenstance.
Wow.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Lieutenant General Charles Cleveland, the last jet ace of the Korean War. I'm Fast Eddie.
I'm Digital Dave, and this is EAA Radio.